You all waited patiently since last week because I kind of left us all hanging in the middle of a thought. I will have to say, if you weren't here last week, you may be thoroughly confused tonight, and I'm sorry about that. But if you go back and listen to last week, tonight will make more sense. Okay? So I have a whole lot of notes, a whole bunch of notes to get through. Not an hour and a half worth, but enough of them. And I want to just give us a quick review. I think it's important. But actually, before that, as Pastor Bud had pointed out, the reason for this, the whole point of this, this talk on ethics, is so that we make decisions that please the Lord. Living in a sin-cursed world, you're going to have to make some hard decisions at some point in your life. And if you're looking for the decisions to always feel comfortable, that's not going to happen. And if you remember, I made you some promises last week. One of those was that I'm going to give you biblical answers, but those answers are going to feel really uncomfortable. You remember that? How many of you felt uncomfortable last week? You can raise your hand. It won't assault me. It's fine. Even if it doesn't assault me, that's fine too. None of you felt uncomfortable?
Not yet.
Not yet? Wow. I sure did. Pastor Bud and I have made each other feel uncomfortable about this on plenty of occasions. Okay, so I want to just do a quick review. If you remember, we started out looking at Rahab, right? She lied to protect the two Israeli spies that she was hiding on her roof. And then we asked some questions. We looked through that whole Joshua 2 narrative. We asked some questions. We asked, now remember, she lied to protect the spies. We asked, is lying a sin? And you would say, yes, lying's a sin. Are we held responsible for our sin? Say yes. All right. Are we always held responsible for lying? Was the next question we asked. And the answer was, not necessarily. And there's where the uncomfortableness comes in. There's where I said, don't get out your pitchforks and torches. I'm not a false teacher. Just give it some time. We'll get to the end. We'll answer why. All right. And then we looked at wrong ways to make ethical decisions. And two of those wrong ways, one was relativism, where right and wrong is relative depending on your culture or from individual to individual. We saw the outcome of that was sin and chaos. It is not a biblical way. It's not a right way to make decisions. It's also self-contradictory because a relativist will say there's no such thing as absolute truth, and they'll say that absolutely. And you can't say that being a relativist. You just refuted your own worldview, which makes it a false worldview. Then we saw non-cognitivists. And the difference with them, well, let me start with the similarity. The similarity with them is the same end result is sin, chaos. Society can't stand up under this kind of worldview. The difference with them is they'd say, well, objective right and wrong really doesn't matter. There's no way to tell objective right and wrong. The only thing that matters is how I feel about something, and how I feel about something is the only thing that needs to be proven of whether it is true or false of how I feel. So how that works out is, under this worldview, if someone says murdering is wrong, well, it doesn't necessarily mean that murdering is wrong objectively. That means that that person feels that murdering is wrong, therefore murdering is wrong. All right, so everything points back to me as being the authority right and wrong, although they wouldn't say that. That's what it does, is point back to that. We looked at that. Those are wrong ways of making decisions. Then right ways to make ethical decisions, we saw, were found in moral categories, which really are drawn out of different truths and principles in Scripture. We saw moral permissibility. It is morally permissible, in other words, for someone to do or not do something. In general, specifically, that may not be the case for somebody. In other words, it is morally permissible for me if I want to have a glass of wine, okay, because I'm not supposed to get drunk, right? So in general, it's okay for me to do that. However, if there's someone with me that would be offended that I would drink a glass of wine because they have an unbiblical conscience, then I should not do that. That in that specific case, that would not be morally permissible for me because I'd cause someone else to stumble. Another instance would be if I had just come out of some kind of enslaving enslaving lifestyle to alcohol, that would be unwise and probably not permissible for me to just to go back and say, well, I can do one. Can you really? Probably not. So in general, okay. Specifically, there are cases where it's not okay. Another category would be moral obligation. That means that you are obliged to do or not do something, to keep a command. You're obliged to keep a command, or you are obliged to not break the command. Then we saw the third category, which would be moral supererogation, which is just a fancy way of saying above and beyond. You're going above and beyond, okay? And there are two sides to the supererogation argument, or the above and beyond argument, two sides of that argument. One side says, well, it's not possible for a Christian to go above and beyond the call of duty because Scripture says that you are, for instance, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, right? Deuteronomy 6. And if you're supposed to do it with all, you can't go above and beyond all. It's not possible. That would be one argument on that side. Then the other side would say, well, it is possible for a Christian to go above and beyond the call of duty, not above and beyond God's standards, because those are perfect, but he or she is capable of going above and beyond their responsibility in life. I'll give you an example. So I'm going to give you some examples later. Let me just leave it at that. It is possible. I'll give you examples later of how to go above and beyond. All right. So we left it there, which is mid-thought. So let me pick up from there and give another possible rebuttal to going above and beyond, supererogation. Some would say, look, there's no greater love than giving one's life for his friend, right? That's in Scripture. That's what Christ did. That is true. That was the salvific plan from before the foundations of the world. That was God's plan A for salvation. That was the best possible plan. That was the only plan for salvation. God's plan A always works. It was God's plan, and there's no better plan than God's plan, right? Right. So that rebuttal, though, would just reveal that supererogation, or above and beyond, is only impossible for God, okay? And you're like, oh, wait, I thought God was omnipotent, was all-powerful. That's true, but there are some things God can't do. God can't sin, correct? God can't sin would be one of them. God can't go above and beyond or below his perfect plan, below his standard. He can't fail to meet his own holy standard. That's something that would be impossible for God to do. All right, so when it comes to both these arguments, I can speak for Pastor Bud because we've already talked. Pastor Bud and I would say that we can hold both. We can hold both of those, okay? On one hand, you cannot go above and beyond God's perfect standard, right? Right. You can say right if you're agreeing with me. If it's not, then don't say anything. I'll get back to you later. On the other hand, we would hold that supererogation is possible for the believer in a fallen world. In a fallen world, okay? So it's okay, for instance, to choose to save or not save a life if it puts your life in peril. Remember we saw last week the command is to not murder, right? What's the flip side of you shall not murder? You shall preserve innocent life. You shall preserve innocent life. So you're morally obligated to save innocent life, but you're not morally obligated to save innocent life if you will lose yours in the attempt. That's supererogation. That's above and beyond. That's above and beyond. And it's supererogation in the midst of a moral dilemma. A moral dilemma. Moral dilemma means that I can't do two things at the same time, which I'm commanded to do both. Okay? That's a moral dilemma. I'm going to give you an example of a moral dilemma. I'm going to give you a few of them. We're going to think through them. And the whole idea now, when we think through moral dilemmas and finish these thoughts, at the end, we'll go back to Rahab, and you should be able to answer that question easily and know that you are biblically sound when you answer the question of Rahab, okay? All right, so here's what this looks like. What about protecting your family? Ephesians 5, right? You are to love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, right? You know that commandment. That is true. That is a command in Scripture. We are to follow it, correct? All right. At the same time, there is the command to preserve innocent life in Exodus 20. That's just as true as Ephesians 5. That's also a command, just like Ephesians 5, and we're to follow that just the same, those two commandments, okay? So Bud and I would assert that believers can and really should hold both commands as true. Scripture states them. We are to hold them both as true. Now, I want you to listen carefully. We may not be able to obey both true commands at the same time, but we can at the same time hold to both commands as true because they both come from God. Does that make sense? Have I lost any of you yet? Have I lost somebody? Both commands are true because Scripture says they're true. We are to obey both of those because Scripture says we are to obey both of those. But there comes a point, or there can come a point in life where we may not be able to keep both of those simultaneously. That's called a moral dilemma, right? In other words, I may not be able to save another's innocent life while also preserving my own. And the fact that I can't do both of those doesn't diminish the authority of either command. Rather, it highlights my need and your need for God's grace. Highlights our need for grace. Doesn't diminish the command, highlights the need for grace. So the difference in which command one follows is answered then in the motive. The motive. In other words, what's your motive in this case of saving their life or saving your life? What would be the motive in that? And the question to ask about motive, or in this hypothetical situation, any hypothetical situation, is can I glorify Christ with either decision that I make? Right? Isn't that the main idea in life, to glorify Christ? So when we're faced with a dilemma, can I glorify Christ with this decision on this hand or this decision on the other hand? Right? That's what we want to get at. This is begging the question of a moral dilemma. Now, I'm going to give you a moral dilemma, okay? And I'm going to warn you again ahead of time, you're going to be uncomfortable with this. I was uncomfortable with this a lot. But this is nonetheless true. Okay, so let's say you and your wife and your teenage son or daughter are on the front porch of your house, right? Inside the house, you have three little children, three toddlers that are inside the house. So the three of you, you and your husband or wife and your teenager are on the front porch, and there's a man that comes up with a gun pulled, and he's threatening to kill all of you that are on the porch, right? Now, you have some decisions to make here. You could either try to protect your wife and your teenager at the risk of your own life. You may or may not be successful, okay? Or you can take off and run. Run where? You can run behind the house and go in the back door and grab those three toddlers and get you all off to safety and leave your wife and your teenager on the front porch to fend for themselves, but you can't do both. You can't do both. Which one do you pick? Which one do you pick? Here's another question besides that. Is it okay to choose either or? The wife and the teenager or the three toddlers? Is it okay to choose either or? Well, I'll put it this way. Let me go a little bit further. Can you please the Lord with either one of those choices? Can you please the Lord with either one of those choices? Somebody's going to die. Which one do you choose? Well, the answer is, can I choose either and can I please the Lord with either? The answer is yes. Either choice is okay, and that's very uncomfortable because some may choose to let their wife and teenager die while they rescue the three toddlers. Some may choose to try and fend off the guy and hopefully make it and preserve some life. So either choice is okay. Either choice, if made with the Lord's pleasure in mind, can please him. And that's hard to come to that answer, but that is true. So the question then becomes, how do you do that? How do you make that choice with the Lord's pleasure in mind? You do that by making the decision based on one of the two commands that we just talked about, right? You either lay down your life for another, or you try to preserve innocent life. You can't do both, right? You can't do both in this scenario. This is a moral dilemma. Welcome to the world of moral dilemmas. If you make a decision to obey one command, if I'm going to run around to the back of the house and save the toddlers, I am then simultaneously saying that I'm going to let my wife and my teenager be shot and killed. I can't do both of those things at the same time. That's the moral dilemma. That is making a decision to obey one command while simultaneously disobeying another, and that is pretty uncomfortable, isn't it? The thought of that. That's pretty uncomfortable. And Scripture teaches over and over again that we're held responsible for our disobedience. So what now? Is this a catch-22? Because either way, I'm going to break a command. Is this a catch-22? And the answer is no. The answer is no. This is not a catch-22. Remember, it's possible to please Christ in this scenario. Even this becomes uncomfortable again. It is possible to please Christ in this scenario, even if one command is disobeyed. So I could say it another more uncomfortable way. It is possible to disobey a command yet please Christ. Possible to disobey a command but please Christ. And you might think, how is that possible? And you should be thinking that. How is that possible? It's possible for this reason. You can't be held responsible for failing to do that which is impossible to do. That which is impossible to do. All right, so in this scenario, it's impossible to simultaneously obey both commands. In this scenario, you can't preserve all the innocent life. You can't do that. You can't possibly save your wife and your teenager, you can possibly save your wife and your teenager, or you can save yourself and the younger children inside, but you can't do both. But if the choice is made with right motives, which is pleasing Christ, right? Even though one command is disobeyed, the other is obeyed. And the obedience pleases Christ. You with me so far? Sort of? Okay. Any questions before I go on? To clear anything up so that you can be with me as I move along? Or are you still withholding judgment at this point? I got some smiles on that one, so that's probably the case for some of you. Is there something I said that you're like, I don't understand what you just said? You can speak up, it's okay. Wow, everyone's tracking. All right, because it took me a couple weeks to figure this out, so you all are a lot faster than I am. All right. Now, I'll point something out again, because I find if something's uncomfortable, if I just keep pointing it out, it becomes a little less uncomfortable because you become desensitized to it. So, all right, even though you can please Christ either way, this decision is very, very uncomfortable that, hey, look, I'm saying that you can please Christ while disobeying a command. Yeah. Now, there could be several reasons for being uncomfortable that I'm saying that. I think one of them is that God's grace and his mercy are so profound that it makes us uncomfortable. God's grace and mercy are so profound it makes us uncomfortable. In other words, we look for fairness, right? We look for fairness, but God's grace and mercy is always unfair. It's always unfair. Let me define some terms. Mercy is not getting what you deserve, okay? Grace is getting what you don't deserve, all right? I get God's mercy in that I don't have to go to hell for not keeping a commandment, okay? I get God's grace and that I can please him while not keeping a commandment. Both of those are unfair, but who are they unfair towards? God, right? They're unfair towards God because he deserves everything, and they're also unfair to me because I deserve nothing, but I get everything. I get mercy and grace, even though none of that is deserved. That's unfair, and that makes us feel very uncomfortable. So what I want to do is, now that I've gone over that framework, I want to give us some moral dilemmas, and I'm going to have you all help me think through this. Help me think through some of these moral dilemmas. I may even point you out specifically and say, what's the answer? I'm not. Okay. Let's think back. in the early age of the church with all the martyrs. How many have read Fox's Book of Martyrs? A few of us have read that. Okay. Saints who would not deny Christ and died some really, really torturous, horrible deaths. Okay? So basically, the situation was that, look, you deny Christ and you worship Caesar or the Catholic Church or the Pope or whomever, or else we're going to kill you in these various ways. And they said, well, we're not going to do that. And so they got killed in various ways. Was that a morally ethical, righteous decision of them to not deny Christ and to die for that, to die for Christ? Anybody have an answer? Just really quiet answers because you're not sure where I'm going to go with this. Yeah, okay, anybody else? I'm agreeing with you. Anybody else? So was that a morally ethical, righteous decision on the martyr's part? To not deny Christ and to die for Christ? Yes. Yes, it was. It was. Okay, it's uncomfortable time again. On the other hand, what if they deny Christ, didn't die, and then live for him the rest of their life? Would that be a decision that could also please Christ? Yeah, good point. Yes, Peter did that. Peter did that. And did he please Christ later, afterwards? He repented, and he pleased Christ later. Absolutely, he did. Yeah. Now, let me ask you in the martyr's case, why they wouldn't necessarily be held responsible for lying. Why wouldn't they necessarily be held responsible for lying? Because we're not talking about situational ethics. The situation informs the ethical decisions that I make, right? And that would be more like relativism. Like, this situation is different than this one, so I'd act differently here than here. We got to have a standard, right? We have a biblical standard. So what command could we follow in this situation to where I would not be held responsible for lying? And we've been over this command many, many times. Sorry? Right, you shall not murder. In other words, you shall preserve innocent life. Were the martyrs innocent? Were they innocent? Right, yeah, they were being persecuted because of Christ. They weren't being persecuted or punished because of some kind of sin. So if they're saying, look, I'm supposed to preserve innocent life, Exodus 20, Exodus 20, it's the sixth commandment. I forget what verse that is. I'm supposed to preserve innocent life. I'm going to preserve my own. I can't do both. I can't proclaim Christ, and I can't preserve my own life at the same time. I'm going to pick one or the other. I'm going to please Christ by preserving my life. Is Christ pleased by keeping the commandment? Yes. Is that an uncomfortable answer? Absolutely, that is an uncomfortable answer. So they're right by saying Christ is Lord, not Caesar, and dying. They're right by saying I'm not a Christian. Yikes, that's uncomfortable. And they said that because they want to please the Lord and preserve innocent life. Okay, it's a moral dilemma. Moral dilemmas, they're called dilemmas for a reason, because they're uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. Remember I told you last week, I lost many nights of sleep over this because it's so uncomfortable thinking through this stuff. Let me give you another one. This one hopefully it's a little bit easier. Okay, so you're on your way into a bank. While you're on your way into the bank, you haven't made it inside yet, but someone comes up behind you, puts a gun in your back, and says, listen, this is what I want you to do. Number one, don't scream, because if you do, I'm going to shoot you in the back. Number two, go into the bank, and I want you to demand money from the teller, or I'm killing you and everyone else in here. So you go into the bank, you demand money from the teller, she or he gives it to you, and you walk out of the bank, and the guy snatches the bag from you and runs off. Are you held responsible for robbing that bank? You're not. Well, you robbed that bank, did you not? You went in and you demanded money. Why are you not held responsible for robbing that bank? Yeah, you preserved innocent life is one right answer. What's that? You saved everyone in there. Yeah, I got good cameras. Here's another one. Here's another reason. That is a correct answer. Here's another answer. Remember we said that you're not held responsible for doing that which is impossible. You are also not held responsible if you are not free in making the decision. I did not say free will. Please do not hear me saying that, okay? If you are not a free agent in making that decision, you are not held responsible. In other words, the guy didn't come up to you with no gun and say, make your decision right now. I want you to rob this bank for me. Will you do it or not? Right? You have a decision at that point. You are free to make the decision, no, I'm not going to do that. Okay? But if you say, okay, I'll help you, that is on you. But you weren't free in that decision. He came up to you and put a gun in your back and said, you're going to do this or else. All right? That's not being a free moral agent to make that decision. It has nothing to do with arbitrary free will. Okay. I'll give you one more, and then we'll move along. Okay, so I have a... I'm not going to put it on me. I'm going to put it on you. Enough of putting it on me. You make an appointment with Pastor Bud that you're going to meet him here at the church at 1 o'clock to talk about something important that has to do with the church. On your way to church, you see somebody in danger on the side of the road that you can help. Okay? Now, if you help this person, you can't make it here by 1 o'clock, by the appointment time to meet with Pastor Bud. Do you help the person or do you not help the person? Let me ask you that, and let me just say that if you help that person, you now will be breaking your word to Pastor Bud. And not that it's so important that I keep my word to Pastor Bud, although that is. It's the important part is that I'm supposed to let my yes be yes and my no be no. I'm supposed to let my word mean something, right? So, there's one possible answer. But I'm going to constrict it to where you can't do that. I'm going to give you not a false dichotomy, but a dichotomy with borders around it that you can't wiggle your way out of it. So, do you stop and help the person, or do you break your word? Help the person. Okay. All right. Help them. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now, so you would say stop and help the person. Now, what would be your biblical command or principle that you would use for that? Can you think of one? How? Possible to save life. So you could say, consider others as more important than yourself. I'm going to consider that person more important than myself. Now, what if I passed by that person and said, I'm considering Pastor Buzz more important than myself. I'm going to keep my word to him. Right or wrong ethical decision? Wrong. Yeah, we certainly don't want to go there. Yeah, so what you're talking about is really a hierarchical system of decision making, which I would agree with. I would agree with that. I think if we just go back to our categories, like moral permissibility, moral obligation, moral supererogation, and think about, okay, in this scenario with either meeting with Pastor Bud or someone in danger, not just broken down, like my car's not working. I mean, that stinks, but you're not in danger. But someone in danger on the side of the road, we would say, okay, am I morally permitted to say, I don't care about someone else in danger? No, am I morally obligated to save that, to help that person if my life's not in danger? Right, if my life's not in danger, I'm morally obligated to do that, to help that person. So is it morally permissible to tell Pastor Bud after I'm done helping the person, I can't make it because of this and this reason? Is that morally permissible? Sure it is. That's not moral obligation. I'm not saying that I must not meet up with Pastor Bud. I'm obligated over here in the hierarchy of decision-making. Helping someone in danger is more important than keeping a 1 o'clock appointment, because we can always make the appointment over again, right? It's not like Pastor Bud is all law, no grace. He's at least 10% grace, right? At least 10. In seminary, they told us in class, that's Grace Church over there. In seminary, this is law. So that's where I got that from. Okay. Remember, the main issue in all this is your motive, right? On one hand, this is helpful to think about this. All right, so on one hand, you can be actively trying to keep God's commands. My motive is to try to keep God's commands, right? Lay down my life for another or preserve innocent life, but I can't do both. All right, in trying to actively keep one commandment, I simultaneously and I passively fail to keep another. All right, but the point is, I'm actively trying to obey, to keep a commandment. So even though you passively fail to keep a command, it was because you were actively trying to keep another one of the commands, and it wasn't possible to do both. But the point is I'm trying to obey. Your motive was to keep God's command, and you did. That pleases Christ, right? Keeping his commandments pleases Christ, right? And because of God's grace and mercy, you aren't held responsible for not doing that which is impossible. Does that make sense now? All right? On the other hand, you can be actively trying to break God's commands of laying down your life for another or preserving innocent life. But while trying to break God's commands in his providence, you happen to keep one of the commands, okay? Because you can't break both at the same time. You may not have cared about your family, and you may have wanted to die by robber and try to get him to kill you, but in your nonsensical argument with the gunman, your family gets away while you're shot, right? In this case, none of your actions, active or passive, please God. None of them please Christ, because your motive was selfishness and not pleasing Christ. So you could have the same exact scenario, different motives. If you have the right motive, which is pleasing Christ, I have options. I can do either or and please Christ. Save my wife and teenager on the porch or the toddlers inside. Either one of those pleases Christ. Same exact scenario, and my motive is to not please Christ, but to serve myself, and no matter what I do, I don't please Christ. Make sense? Moral dilemma could be handled one of two ways. So let's go back, go to Judges 2 with the time remaining. Or not Judges, but Joshua chapter 2. And while you're turning there, you'll remember that this is God's fulfillment to his people. He said that you are going to have many offspring, from fulfillment to Abraham, even many offspring. There are many Israelites now. You're going to have a land, and they are now crossing into the promised land. And the Israelites have affirmed their devotion to the Lord and to Joshua. And he sent out some spies to spy out where they're going to conquer next, and they have been very successful in conquering. In fact, it's been a complete devastation of whoever they fight against. They haven't even lost one Israelite soldier, but the enemy certainly loses some people. And I'm going to pick this up, I think, in verse 6, because I read all of it last time. Oops. I will pick up in verse 1. Joshua chapter 2, verse 1. All right, Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men as spies secretly from Shittim, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." All right, so they went and came into the house of a harlot, whose name was Rahab, and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men from the sons of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land." And the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land." Now, you better believe that this is upon pain of death. Bring them out, or I'm going to kill you for harboring spies. Okay? Verse 4, "But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them, and she said, 'Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from.'" Was that a lie? Was that a lie that she just told them? That was a lie. Verse 5, "And it came about when it was time to shut the gate," this is what she continues telling them, "at dark, that the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them." So she's further deceiving them. Verse 6, "But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them in the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order on the roof." And so verse 7 talks about how they went out pursuing them. Went out pursuing the spies that weren't out there. They were up on the roof. Now, did Rahab lie? All right. Is lying a sin? Yes. Now, these are all the same questions as last week. Can Rahab be held responsible for lying in this case? I hear a no. I hear a yes. If the answer is no, put your hand up. If the answer is yes, put your hand up. And I see one of these. I didn't give you any option for that, but okay. Okay. How about this? Does the Lord always hold us responsible for failing to keep a commandment? such as lying. Now, I'm going to just kind of give you the answer, because I already gave you the answer earlier. No. The answer is no. Okay? Now, if not, why not? Why would... Correct. She saved innocent lives. She had a choice to make. To save innocent life, that commandment, or to keep the commandment of not lying. Can't do both. Right? I can't do both. Now, let me ask you another question. What if she chose the other way around? They would kill her too. What if she gave him up? Not have been in God's graces. It's her motive behind it. Now, if I were to go on and read again like I read last week, we'd see that she already knew who these men were. She knew who Yahweh was. She was a believer in Yahweh. She knew what was going on. So I would say, and she knew that they were there to conquer the land. So I would say in this case, she would not want to give them up. I think in that case, that would be sin to give them up because she knew exactly why they were there and who they were. Yes. I understand the thought behind that. I understand the well-meaning behind that. I think that comes awfully close. To throw yourself off this temple. Won't the Lord protect you? I think it comes close to presuming on God's grace. I would be a little uncomfortable with that. Have anything to add to that? Well, this is where I was going to go because God is sovereign. Yeah. Another good point. God is sovereign in what happened in Scripture. She lied and protected the soldiers, right? That's what happened in Scripture. Was God sovereign over that? Did he ordain that? Well, we don't want to say he wasn't sovereign over that. It was outside of his sovereign power. That's not the case. So that is exactly what happened, and it happened exactly the way God wanted it to happen in his sovereignty, and that worked out through his providence. That's exactly how it happened. Okay? Yes. What's that? This is not without tension. None of this is without tension. We do. And there's plenty of times he has not, and people have died. Yeah. That's because they live in the Northeast and none of them have guns. Down here, everyone would pull out a gun and shoot back. Yes. Can you read me a scripture? Sure. We read scripture here.
In James chapter Mm. The context of the scripture, when it says in the same way, it's referring to Abraham and his faith. So, yes, one truth, Rahab, but that's a truth. She also honored God. That's a truth. In our finite minds, we cannot reconcile that. But in God's mind, that's perfectly harmonized.
Yeah, and something, yeah, I mean, the point there is that if you have true saving faith, you will work real righteousness because of that true saving faith, right?
So Rahab was righteous,
yeah.
But she also lied.
Yep.
Both are true.
Right, both are true, yes. And just another, you know, another example, doesn't necessarily have to do with ethics, that is hard for us to reconcile is God's sovereignty in salvation and man's responsibility in salvation. Right? Parallel truths that never intersect in our mind. We can't make it happen, but it makes perfect sense to God. Both are true. This is just another one of those.
So are we trying to make something that we cannot reconcile in our mind making a difference?
No, that's why the tension's there. That's why the tension's there. That's why everyone in this room has felt uncomfortable at some point tonight and or last week, because we can't fully reconcile. We want to put a nice bow on top of things, wrap it up, right? And say, okay, I got this in the box with the bow on it. Can't always do that with ethics. Not in a sin cursed world, you can't. And on top of that, like I had mentioned earlier, God's grace and mercy is so profound that we become uncomfortable with it. That I can keep that command by protecting those spies. That's true. I've lied. That's true. God is pleased with me. All three of those are true. And we go, yikes. But it is true. Because the motive, her motive in that point was to keep God's commandment. Okay? Any questions? We were a little bit over. Any questions? A comment? Okay. Yeah, very important.
Because the wages of sin is death, but yeah. It's paid for at Christ.
Yeah.
So we because grace can overcome God or Rahab's sin, just like Harvest sin.
Yeah, very important on the, were you gonna say something? No, very important on the wording is that I can please God because my motive, the emphasis is on my motive. I want to keep the commandment, realizing I can't keep both. I want to keep one of them. So I'm pleasing to God because I'm keeping his commandment. Does it please God to keep his commandment? Yes, right? I can't do both. God's gracious. He knows I can't do both, so I do one. I would not put the emphasis on I'm pleasing God by breaking the commandment. I would say I am actively trying to keep the commandment while passively breaking another one, and it pleases God that I've actively tried to keep one. Okay? Does that make sense? Is that better? Good comment. Anything else? Because Pastor Bud's going to close us out, and if there's anything to be thrown, he's going to be up here, not me. Okay. If you have any questions afterwards, let me know.